I just got a present for being a teacher. I'm a part-time teacher, and yesterday we had our closing little, you know, ceremony.
Was it a mug?
Well, no. So don't ruin my story because I have to tell you what it was, and now you've already kind of ruined my setup.
Oh my God.
Katie?
Sorry.
Sorry. Katie. So anyway, they're like, you walk up, they're like, Ronit, flying glass plank. You're like, what school is this? No, they don't say it like that. They're just like, Ronit, flying glass plank. I come up. And they hand me this thing, which is a rectangle, and it's solid looking, and it's pretty long. I'm like, oh, chocolate!
It's a knife!
No, okay. No, sorry. Would you stop? Okay. God, my story is useless. No.
So you I was thought like, it was chocolate.
I was like, it's a chocolate bar, which I always think when anyone wants to give me anything. My whole life, I've always hoped it was chocolate. My parents have stories about that, going to places asking for chocolate. It was just a notepad with a pencil. But I was like, I wanted it to be chocolate. So I thought maybe you'd understand that.
I do understand
that.
Did
that story mean anything to you? Because you kind of interrupted a couple times. Did you get anything
out of
it?
No, I totally did. Okay. Because we have to buy presents for my kids' teachers. Ah. And he's like, I want to get them. He wants to get one of them a mirror. And he wants to get
one
of them a picture frame.
Well, that's cute because some people are diabetic and they shouldn't have chocolate. Like, we have a teacher like that.
I'm just going to get him Target gift cards.
That's good, too.
Like, I just, like, go buy something you want. Go buy your own mirror and picture frame.
Do your own retail therapy.
I'm pitting out so bad.
Okay.
Look at this.
Guess what? You're listening to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Ronit.
I'm Katie.
Yay!
I'm sweating. I am sweating. Okay, so first of all, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious.
I don't know. We haven't talked about her yet because she's ever present. She's always there. She doesn't change much. And she seems like the least captivating of the women in the White House.
Yeah, she's kind of like a human, it is what it is, right? Like Sarah Huckabee Sanders is just like, well, there she is. She's just SHSing again.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders makes me ask the question, where do you feel things? Because I don't see it. I mean, I see it in the eyebrows, and that's not like a woman-on-woman anger. What, are you still laughing? That's a good day. But anyway, it's like the eyebrows kind of knit together,
oh my gosh.
She just kind of has this like ongoing thing, and it makes me think that maybe when she's in her house with her kids, because I hear she has some kids, she's like, put that bowl away, and then let's clear the table, and then let's get the TV going and get into your jammies. And like I said, it's time for bed.
Like her only feeling is irritation?
Yeah, or just
potentially
long-sufferingness. So she's a mom. She's an evangelical. She's conservative. She's a family person. So there's this idea, I think, because she's a woman, woo, and only the third woman in this position.
And the first mom.
And the first mom.
Yeah.
And actually a very devout woman. So I think there's this idea, if you list that, mom, woman, evangelical, I don't know, like long hair, I don't know. All those things make me think, oh, maybe there's some tenderness there. I know, maybe that's sexist. But that's why it's so strange how cardboardy, robot-y she is.
Well, so, this taps into such an interesting question about her because she is such a powerful figure, right? She is the mouthpiece of the administration.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how much does her sex impact our perceptions of her character or her like shortcomings as a feminist? Like, does she owe us her support woman to woman?
No, I mean, obviously, I feel clearly she has there's no value in that for her. I think that she knows how to handle the information she needs to get out from Trump. I think because she worked for her father for a long time in politics.
And who's her father again?
Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, right.
You knew who he was.
I did.
You just wanted me to say the name.
Yeah, I did.
I'm not going to fall for that again. You do it yourself next time.
Folksy Satan Huckabee.
Yes, so yeah. She is a classical evangelical woman, according to Anthea Butler, who is a religious professor over at University of Pennsylvania. She's someone who has worked for men and knows basically that she has to behave a certain way for men, support men in power. She just has to back them at all costs and not to appear to disagree in public. So she does that brilliantly.
She does.
And I think that's part of the reason it's so astounding, at least to me. And I would love to talk to some conservative people one-on-one to ask them what they see when they see her do her press briefings. Are they rooting her on? Are they frustrated by the lack of actual, substantial information? Because what she does with Trump is, I hear in the background, she'll go and ask him questions and, figure out how to answer the questions the press is going to ask. And then if she can tell that there's going to be problems, instead of telling Trump right off the bat, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. That's not a really good strategy. She'll say, well, then the reporter's going to say this. So what should I say? And kind of leads him slowly into maybe changing what he wants her to say, which is also very smart.
And that's a very female tactic also, rather than like engaging in a one-on-one, like head-on conflict of like, I disagree with your idea.
Yeah. How would like, that go with Trump?
What do you think? I don't know, but I'm guessing this might happen. Could you give me some of your wisdom and like show me how I should handle
however,
this?
However, you and I know that her brand of that would be more like, how would that work?
Exactly. And as you were saying that she had this kind of, this long-term career working with men, it does make sense that she would maybe be a little bit more buttoned up and a little bit more like emotionally restrained because, as we all know, women are far more emotional than men.
Always.
Obviously.
I'm crying right now.
Yeah, I'm really, really emotional.
Speaking about crying?
Yes.
Benji, the 13-year-old reporter who was in the press briefing, I believe it was last week, asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
At school, we recently had a lockdown drill. One thing that affects mine and other students' mental health is to worry about the fact that we or our friends could get shot at school. Specifically, can you tell me what the administration has done and will do to prevent these senseless tragedies?
I think that as a kid and certainly as a parent, there is nothing that could be more terrifying for a kid to go to school and not feel safe. So I'm sorry that you feel that way. This administration takes it seriously. And the School Safety Commission that the president convened is meeting this week, again, an official meeting, to discuss the best ways forward and how we can do every single thing within our power to protect kids in our schools and to make them feel safe and make their parents feel good about dropping them
off. And it was notable because it was one of the first times that Sarah Huckabee Sanders ever had a sort of emotional reaction other than frustration or thinly veiled, you know,
disgust.
Anger. She sort of, you could hear her voice break, and people in the press made a really big note of this. A lot of outlets reported it because her voice started to break. It was an unmistakable kind of waver in her voice, and there was a wetness around her eyes. And I was on Tear Watch 2018.
Exactly.
Oh, there it is. There it is. This is going to spill out. And she recovered pretty quickly, and then the outcome of that was just that Benji didn't really get an answer. There was, you know, I'm sorry you feel this way and that you have to go through that. It would be terrible to feel that way.
Next, and Benji was like,
he's like, well, I guess that went well.
Exactly. Well, so this reminds me so much of the whole Melania through a state dinner, good job Melania thing. Like, except Sarah Huckabee Sanders chose this job. Like, she has not been victimized by this narrative. She's not, like, dragged against her will along with this administration. She picked this job. And I think the most feminist position that we can have for her is to say, like, you're responsible for your choices and you're complicit in the way this administration is treating women and families. I want to talk about the difference between her being a feminist or not a feminist and her being, like, outright harmful to women. Okay. Because there's a difference. There's a difference, right?
Right. Like, it'd be kind of neutral.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I don't need her to agree with me. I don't need her to have the same values and priorities that I have. But I would like her to not be actively shitting on women from her position of authority and actively making women's lives harder slash the living hell that they are right now as their children are being ripped out of their arms at our borders.
Right. And there is an interesting feature of wondering why she would work for Trump, because many people see Trump as sort of a shyster. Well, not sort of. He's a shyster. And they see him as disingenuous. And I read that she found appealing in Trump the idea that what he said and what he looks like is who you get. There is no kind of falsity around him. And also, you could understand maybe if you got into her brain that maybe she supports Trump because of his stance on abortion, because of the judges he wants to place on the Supreme Court, and because of religious liberty, his stance on religious liberty.
Yeah.
And the other side of this, the evangelical faction believes that because Trump became president, because he won, there was likely some kind of divine intervention. It was God's plan for Trump to be president, and because it was God's choice, they need to support him. So coming from that kind of viewpoint, you can maybe see why she has dug in her heels and defended him.
Yeah, okay, two questions. First of all, does God look like Vladimir Putin to these people? And, right?
Right?
And then, okay, so back to this whole like pro-choice, pro-life thing, because I think there's something really interesting there, that she can be pro-life for herself. Right? She can be pro-life for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and she can believe in having that conversation with people and saying, like, I believe this, right? But there's a difference between being pro-choice and saying, you should have the choice, but that's not what I agree with, and saying, I know better than you how to do your life. I know how you should make your choices, and I'm gonna use my power to try to force you to make the choices that I would make. And that is the difference between like autonomy.
Yes, it's autonomy. That's
and hegemony,
right?
Like you don't get to colonize me with your values. I'm not trying to colonize you with my values, or am I? I don't know.
I don't think you're trying to colonize me with your values.
Well, am I trying to colonize Sarah Huckabee Sanders with my values? By being like, you're a woman, do woman things, be for women.
Well, I can see how you could think that, but I think what you're asking for is a little more understanding about how she is a human being.
Yeah, it's
like,
true.
How is she human?
Where does she feel
I'm really captivated by her roboticness. But
I wonder before she goes on, like, does she just, like, put her finger in a socket and, like, I feel nothing. And then, like, she goes out. Like, that's what I imagine.
Well, I think also part of what we're talking about is, well, for me at least, how much is too far? How far is Sarah Huckabee Sanders going to go? I mean, Sean Spicer, like, blew up and imploded.
Which actually made me trust him a little bit more.
Yes,
the fact that you could see the cracks in him, it was like, yeah, that job sucks.
Yes, I think we're just gaping at Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I always have to say all three of her names.
Yeah.
But I think we're gaping, sort of just waiting to see, are really this too?
Hi, I'm Sarah Leibovitz, a producer at Large Media. Do you love listening to the hilarious and insightful tones of Katie and Roni on the regular? Wish you had more podcasts to fill your commute the other 6 days of the week? Well, be sure to keep your eyes and ears open, because the Large Network is coming your way. Learn more at larjmedia.com. And remember, when you want to go big, go large.
It's time. It's time to talk about Jordan Peterson. Even though he is beneath our contempt, I guess some people think we need to talk about him.
And he's been a bit in the press lately, so I feel like he's kind of reached that point where we need to at least dismantle this guy.
Exactly. Can we? Oh, that's going to be so fun.
Let's dismantle him.
Okay.
So who is Jordan Peterson?
Jordan Peterson is a psychology professor at the University of Toronto in Canada. He rose to fame in Canada when the Canadian government was debating human rights protections for transgender people, and he decided that using alternate pronouns or enacting protection for transgender people that would be legally protected, it infringed upon his right of free speech to be as big of an asshole as he wants to be whenever he wants to be. And so ever since he kind of testified in Canada saying that unchecked political correctness that flies in the face of known facts like gender is biologically determined because only real scientists believe that, my quotation fingers are going to basically
fall
be
off,
like eagle talons by the end of this, because it's just, it's like, okay. So after he rose to fame there, he had a book, The 12 Rules of Life, An Antidote to Chaos. It's a New York Times bestseller now, and he's been touring sold out venues across North America. And he's been on the Joe Rogan explosion.
He's got millions of views on YouTube, and he's got lots of money that he's making just on Patreon. He gets thousands of dollars a month now just because of all of the people fundraising.
Okay, yeah. What does he actually
do? Well, some of the things that he says is that he believes that the left is primarily responsible for increased polarization. He believes that the left is actually transforming the next generation into whiners and losers. And he was against mandatory bias training for staff at his university.
So first of all, you can just watch this guy. He so gets off on being told that he's like dangerous and revolutionary. Like, people are scared to hear you talk, Jordan Peterson. He's like, I know they are. No one's scared to hear you talk. You've been saying the same boring shit that people have been saying forever. Like, kids today are so whiny. Not revolutionary.
I've got a really good quote from a reporter named Tabitha Southie, and she's from a Canadian magazine called Maclean's, and she designated him the stupid man's smart person.
Oh, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting when you hear him talk. He's not your Alex Jones. He's not your unhinged, about to have a stroke, spewing conspiracy theories.
Vein in the forehead.
Exactly. What he says is not substantive. I want to make sure that's very, very clear. But he says it in such a way that lends himself credibility. He is a psychology professor at the University of Toronto. He's a big deal. And when he speaks very carefully. And he constructs his arguments very carefully.
He's sort of like fatherly. I liken him for the incels like the incel Ben Kenobi.
He's evil Santa.
He's just like, he's sort of like solemn and kind of monkish and sort of very level, you know, level-headed seeming. And so these guys who feel disenfranchised, these white men,
who aren't
getting laid enough and don't feel successful enough, are flocking to him kind of to get bolstered, you know? But people in power attain their control a lot of times by mixing their words around and sounding important. And what we're saying is that he's not very substantive.
He's not very substantive, but he is a very, very skilled public speaker and debater. And one of the ways that he, like one of his rhetorical strategies that he uses a lot is very, very clever, where he will say something that is legit true, but he'll say it in a context that suggests something that is extremely controversial.
So do you have an example?
I do. Okay, so say we're in a fitting room and I'm trying on a pair of like acid wash jeans and I come out and I say, Jordan Peterson, does my ass look fat in these jeans? And he says, well, traditionally darker washes are more slimming. Okay, that's true, but did you just, the context in which you gave me that fact insinuates that yes, you think my ass looks fat in these jeans.
Right.
So now I, wearer of the jeans, have a choice. I either have to say it, did you just say my ass looks fat? Which means he will say, no.
I didn't say that, technically.
I am a scientist. I am merely reporting known facts about denim washes, right?
Globity, glab, blob, stuff of junk.
Yeah, or I can like fight with him about whether darker wash on denim is actually slimming, which is not a debate that is winnable, honestly, because it's like, yes, it is. It is incontrovertibly true. Darker denim is more slimming. However, the value system that he is laying on top of the slimming quality of jeans is not incontrovertible. And this whole like passive aggressive, sneaky little pseudo fact insertion is only gonna go so far.
Yeah.
Right?
It's kind of like, I didn't say that, but if you think that, that must be what you think. So
yeah,
you're like, the one who has the problem.
It's like half a step higher than like, I was just joking. Saying something super rude and then being like, JK, like that's like half a step more sophisticated.
And a lot of people interviewed for articles lately on him don't want to go on the record because Twitter is going to come for them. All of his supporters, all of his incel babies are going to come after them and dox them and things like that. So people are very afraid to go on the record about Peterson.
Yeah, which again feeds into this idea that he's like this revolutionary thinker who's like a dangerous man to fight with. I'm not scared of you. We're not scared of you because you're not saying anything new or interesting. Like, oh, you don't think you should have to use a trans person's preferred pronoun? Welcome to the fucking party, pal. It's not a party I want to go to, but like this is not a new idea. The idea that you would prioritize your ability to choose another person's identity over that person's identity, that's not new. That's not interesting. You're boring. It's not dangerous. You're boring.
It's pseudo-facts and it's lazy.
It's super lazy. So the thing that I wanted to focus on right now is the idea of identity politics, which to him is basically the same thing as Stalinism. This is real. He actually said
that people
who engage in identity politics are pushing toward a like progressive fascist regime. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the term of identity politics is basically the idea that a certain group of people that is defined by some form or some facet of their identity deserves rights. Which is very controversial.
Wait a minute, it's like, wait, we're all people and we're alive on the planet, so we're equal?
Exactly, so this is a claim or like an arrow that is slung at many people who are like social justice warriors or progressive activists. Like, stop playing identity politics. Stop making police brutality about race. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
So you mean it's a lazy response?
It's a lazy response designed to shut people down and delegitimize arguments. Like, just because you're black doesn't mean you know black things better than I do. And like, well, it kind of does. Or just because you're a woman doesn't mean you understand what women need better than I do. Yeah, it kind of does. Like, I'm not saying that I understand womanhood better than every man on earth, but like, I'm living the experience here. And P.S., I will stop playing identity politics when you stop criminalizing, taxing, and colonizing our identities, right? This is not okay. And so his like whole thesis around this is that identity politics is pushing us toward a more extremely polarized society in which people who argue for equity are essentially the alt-left. We are as far to the left, and it is as extreme to want racial equity, gender equity, LGBTQIA+ equity, All of those things are as extreme and unreasonable as racial
white
supremacy.
So he's basically like shaking us down to like this corner. He's just like, let's scooch you little crumbs down to this corner of the box.
Exactly. As if radical equality was as restrictive as radical inequality.
When it's 100% the opposite.
I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. I don't have numbers on that, but I think radical equality will actually not be as bad as radical inequality. He also argues that oppression is a myth, it's a construct. He thinks the patriarchy is like, fine. Like, the patriarchy's not a problem. He thinks the patriarchy's not a problem. He does. He thinks that. So that's fine. He probably also thinks white supremacy is like NBD.
I mean, historically, thanks for clarifying NBD.
NBD, no,
because
big deal.
I'm not good at those initial things. But historically, the people who are benefiting don't want change. So that fits in perfectly because
exactly.
Does he checkmark all the boxes? He's got power. Mm-hmm. He's a male. Mm-hmm. He's white. Mm-hmm. He lives in a democracy, mm-hmm. right? So he's mm-hmm. all good, right?
Yep.
He's straight.
Totally.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He's, as far as we know, he's straight.
Right.
I love that the subtitle for his book is An Antidote to Chaos. Because you know what else is fucking chaotic? When a caterpillar turns into a butterfly, that shit is chaotic on a cellular level. But that doesn't mean that you can stop the caterpillar from doing its metamorphosis and turning into the thing that it's going to be.
Right. I would like to believe that the reason why all these incels are coming out of their holes and why racism is so apparent right now is because people are about to go down. Like, I think it's going to be done soon.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't agree with that. It's not going to be done soon.
I think it's going to be done soon. I think it's like a 30-year problem. Like, and, you know, we're talking about 30, 50, 100-year problems in which we're going to make a 1 year's advancement. But I think we are going to continue to make advancement. As we were talking about, like, that pushback, like, Me Too and equity, Jordan Peterson, nope, Me Too and equity. Like, we're going to keep coming back harder because this guy is a joke. His whole argument for the reason that patriarchy is okay is that all animals organize themselves in social hierarchies. But there's, like, no basis for justifying oppressive patriarchy based on the fact that lobsters pick a captain, apparently. I don't know what their lobster term, Captain Lobster.
Aye. So the other issue about him that is frightening and people find disarming is that he does speak well. He has education. He is a psychologist. He seems to be fatherly in some ways. He's the voice of reason. He's not hysterical. He has actual credentials, and he has appeared on numerous shows and in some cases, quote, owned the progressive interviewers.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at his stuff, you'll see people who support him.
Don't look on YouTube.
Thinking that he basically, you know, slam dunked certain interviews.
Yeah, the YouTube clips are really, really tough to get through. Like, we did that for research for the show, but it's like,
don't subject yourself
don't do
to
it.
That.
Because, you know, all of them, it's like, watch Jordan Peterson own stupid transgender professor. And it's like, this transgender professor just calmly, reasonably said, I think it's the role of an academic to be a critical conscience of its culture.
Right.
That's not, and Jordan Peterson was like, you can't tell me what pronouns to use. You didn't own this person. This person owned you.
I see Jordan Peterson as sort of just another incarnation of another megalomaniac who has gotten a little bit drunk on power and has found an audience. And there are people out there, like there always have been and there always will be, who want to be told how to think and what to do. I see this with certain, you know, coercive spiritual leaders. I see this in politics, people who own big businesses. This is sort of a personality trait of someone who believes that they know all the answers and they can stomp on anyone who doesn't agree with them. And what's scary about it is that there must be enough lost young men or men who feel aimless and feel like they're on the wrong course or don't know what their options are, who buy in because they need an answer. And like any of these gurus or leaders, there is no simple answer, but they will appear for you and you can listen to them if you want. But ultimately, we're all in it alone and we all have to make our own decisions. It is time for some good news.
Woo!
We have some good news tidbits. I want to know if you ever dreamed of being Miss America.
No.
No, come on.
That was not my dream. I dreamed of winning an Oscar for like playing Amelia Earhart. And I practiced
specifically.
Yeah, I practiced my, I mean, I don't bear a strong resemblance to Amelia Earhart, but like that's part of
that's
the Oscar
Hollywood
bid is like
is
a
for.
Profound transformation of
yes.
my body and soul. And I totally practiced my speech in the mirror.
That's adorable that you wanted to be Amelia.
Oh yeah.
So I grew up watching the sparkly crowns and like I didn't want to be a Miss America. I probably knew, well, it really did not appeal to me. I mean, maybe I wanted to be an actress, but I did not want to be a Miss America contestant. But I did like the sparkly things, and I did find it a little vapid. But the reason I mentioned this is
it's like shiny, pretty, bright, colorful people. Like, it's candy.
It's candy. It's, you kind of can just phone it in. It's autopilot. But so Miss America, the Miss America pageant, has just done away with the bathing suit competition. Yes, so I consider that good news.
That's awesome. Although I'm wondering, are they going to like substitute, like, we're getting rid of the bathing suit competition because we're woke. Next up, the lingerie competition will be thongs optional, ladies, but recommended.
Yeah. There's a little bit of pushback from some former contestants. I listened to something on KUOW, which is our local NPR station, which just said this one woman who was a former contestant, she won actually a long time ago, just that she hopes that people will still pay attention to fitness. And that, you know, health is really important. And so it's just kind of interesting because it's got women talking.
Yeah. Why are we assuming that just because they look a certain way, they're fit? Like, why is that the assumption that we're making? Yes, you can be fit and then also not look like a Barbie doll in a swimsuit. Like, and you can also be super fit and look like a Barbie doll in a swimsuit. I'm not trying to shame slender women, larger women, tall women, short women, swarthy women, whatever. Like,
swarthy.
I love that word.
Okay,
but cool. That bothers me. Like, oh, I hope they're still fit is code for, like, I hope they're still hungry. Like, I hope they still fit into this one mold of what a person looks like.
I hope
whatever.
Trump would still want to assault them. What? Is that?
No.
Did I?
No, you got it. Moving on. I'm not going to top it. Go ahead.
That's so funny that you think that was like a lot, because I was like, it's an easy grab. Okay. Kelly Sadler, the White House press staffer, who basically was like, well, who cares about John McCain? He's about dead. Right? It's in such good taste to say things like that.
Such a garbage
person. It doesn't matter if she was thinking it. Just, like, don't say that stuff. People must feel really safe in the White House, you know, in Trump's White House, that they can say crap like
which
this.
Which is fucking hilarious, because has there ever been a leakier White House? I don't know. Like, it's like everyone has, like, spy pens that they got on Amazon that they're, like, in their lapels just, like, leaning in for all the conversations. Like, say that louder.
The walls.
Attorney General
ears.
Sessions? Yeah.
Anyway, so Kelly Sadler, she is out. She's out at the White House. So she never publicly apologized to John McCain. She maybe privately apologized to his daughter, never came
Which
out.
Which is
and
the
said,
same thing.
Yeah, and so she's out. So there's a little bit of justice. And
you know, she's out. So, like, maybe this is just, like, the first snowball rolling down the mountain and, like, lots more. Okay.
So the judge who sentenced.
Yes.
Stanford swimmer Brock Turner, who, I mean, how would you describe what he did behind the dumpster?
He's a rapist. He's a sex offender.
Yes.
And a rapist.
He's a bro.
Yeah.
He got 6 months in jail. He got a 6-month sentence from this Aaron Persky, the judge who was in charge of it. And there was a woman named Michelle Dauber who basically started in June 2016 a petition, sort of a movement to get rid of Aaron Persky, to get him, you know, de-seated, unseated, off his seat, and he's out.
Yep.
So that's some good news.
And just a reminder that this is a guy who listened to Emily Doe's letter read aloud in court, who looked at this young woman who had been violated and profoundly changed by this young man's choice, not his moment of insanity, but his actual fucking choice that he made repeatedly over and over again through the passage of time until he got caught, tried to lie about it, unsuccessfully lied about it, then, like, made up a whole thing that she was into it even though she was unconscious. This judge sentenced him so leniently because he felt that this young man had just so much potential. Yeah. And it would be a shame to let one mistake ruin the rest of his
life. Because he was an Olympic swimmer, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
he's a really good swimmer.
Right?
Swimming
probably
is
came
really
from a good
important.
Family.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his dad was also just, like, so upset because he couldn't even eat a steak.
What?
Yeah, Brock couldn't even eat a steak while he was on trial for raping an unconscious woman. He couldn't even eat, and he couldn't even enjoy a steak, you guys.
That is like a really weird side effect of rape.
It was sad.
Yeah.
You just heard Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory with Katie
and Ronit,
a Large Media production. That's LARJ, Large. If you like this episode or want to follow up on anything we talked about, come find us at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory or tweet at me, bro. yeah, that's a good one. I'm at Mouthy Podcast on Twitter. We loved making this podcast, and if you love listening to it, please help us out. Thanks for listening.